This is episode number 793 of the Secret Identity Podcast, and today in What's New, we're going to talk about It setting box office records and the passing of Len Wein. Our comics this week will be The Flash number 29, Edge of Venomverse number 3, and Star Wars Adventures number 1. And our Summer of Dread reading project wraps up this week with the final pieces of the Judge Dredd Complete Case Files Volume 1.
Before we get started, does anyone want to get out?
The Human Torch was denied a bank loan.
This is all your fault, you!
Get that finger out of your ear. You don't know where that finger's been.
Why do you keep staring at me?
You have 20 seconds to comply.
And welcome, everybody, to Secret Identity. This is Brian Letendry here, as always, with the lovely, the talented, the beautiful, the Wolverine, Matthew A. Herring. How are you today, sir?
Doing well. And just so people know, because I'm not a huge comic book Wolverine fan, It is from the Red Dawn Wolverines.
I love that shirt. I was just talking about Red Dawn the other day.
My daughters still remember that as the movie where the guy peed on the engine, not realizing that he peed in the radiator because the truck overheated.
Sure.
So that's what they remember it as.
I remember it as when I was a kid and we were ironically worried about the Russians.
Oh, absolutely.
I used to always have dreams about that scene from Red Dawn where the parachutes are coming down and they look out the classroom window.
And the teacher goes out and gets shot.
Yep. Like that scene is burned into my mind forever.
I have that scene. And if you remember the very first 5 or 10 minutes of the TV series Jericho.
Uh-huh.
When they looked over and they saw the mushroom cloud in the distance.
Yes.
And then everything went blank.
Yeah.
Those are like the
Then
two...
there was the movie The Day After. I mean, there was definitely some nuclear scare stuff. But that specific scene from Red Dawn where the parachutes are coming down, like that will always be embedded in my mind.
Just a crazy – that was an insane movie.
Because it was 84, right?
I believe so.
So 84, I was 10, which means I was in fifth grade. So I was in elementary, and I saw that movie like when it came out.
I did too, and I was, I think, ninth grade.
Yeah, and so it definitely left a mark on me for sure.
And you know what? That's kind of the magic of our childhood. So many of those things. I mean, granted, it's not a good scar to have. I mean,
I wonder what my brain would be like now had I not seen so many rated R or PG that should have been rated R movies. Before I was of age to see them. I just wonder like how my tastes would have had developed, how my brain would have developed because 80s action movies, 80s horror is basically half of my brain and the other half is 80s music.
Yeah. Yeah. It's funny. Joe Caramagna put a post up a couple days ago about It. And talking about the fact that his mother let him read the paperback when she was a little kid.
Uh-huh.
And then the thing was, what was my mother even thinking? And a lot of times our parents didn't even have a chance.
She was probably thinking, if he can make his way through this gargantuan book, then he deserves to read it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, speaking of It, that's a fantastic segue, Matthew. For our news this week, Argentinian director Andres Muschietti's adaptation of Stephen King's It debuted with $117.8 million, the third best opening of 2017, setting numerous box office records and boosting the slumping box office up 22% from the same weekend last year when the thriller Don't Breathe opened with $26.4 million. It accounted for 75 cents of every dollar spent this weekend at the box office that was starving for something new and exciting. Ironically, it's a remake.
Yes.
The R-rated horror film's performance was better than expected, especially considering that Hurricane Irma shut down hundreds of theaters in Florida, a state that typically accounts for 5 to 6.5% of the North American box office. That's huge.
I didn't know that.
I didn't know that either. The first part of what will be a two-part adaptation of King's horror masterwork concentrates on the episode from the 80s in which Pennywise the Dancing Clown terrorizes a group of teen misfits. It bested the second-place film by almost $110 million, the fifth-largest gap between number one and number two in history, and the new Pennywise saga totally destroyed both the September record for debuts and the combined September-October fall record. It also managed the largest opening ever for an R-rated horror film, besting 2001's Hannibal. Machete's film also set other records for R-rated horror films, including the biggest Thursday night preview, biggest single day. It's already the highest grossing Stephen King horror adaptation and will almost certainly surpass The Green Mile to become Stephen King's best received horror movie of all time.
I didn't know The Green Mile was him.
It was.
I did not realize.
Can you
that.
Believe that? I mean, that is a huge, huge opening. And there is a podcast that I want to plug now because I was just thinking about this called Postmortem with Mick Garris. Now, Mick Garris is considered to be one of the masters of horror. He has done a ton of horror stuff, and he also did the Masters of Horror TV series. Well, he has a podcast where he interviews horror directors and horror writers and horror actors and actresses. And I just discovered it, and I've just been listening through it. But he had Joe Dante and John Landis on.
Oh, wow.
Who are both, like, amazing.
That's legend right there.
And so the three of them, I mean, it's like sitting in on a conversation between the three of them where they're talking about, like, how horror has evolved and all this kind of stuff. And what they talked about was that in times of unrest, horror sees a resurgence.
Yes.
And so I think we're going through that now. When you look at the success of horror movies like Annabelle Creation, which came out recently, did really well at the box office. It, obviously, it's a Stephen King, you know, adapted movie, but is doing gangbusters at the box office. When you look at things like Stranger Things, like, there's definitely a resurgence of horror right now. And my theory about that is that when everything's peaceful and cool, an escape from reality doesn't have to be that extreme to be an escape from reality. Mm-hmm. I think when things are a little bit crazy, then your escape from reality and that cathartic sort of getaway and release and dealing with all the emotions that you're dealing with, that needs to be more extreme because life is more extreme.
Yeah.
And so that's just my personal theory of why, like, people look to horror at things like that, because you have to try harder to escape from reality. So, but that's super interesting and super awesome because I have not seen it yet. I'm looking forward to it. But the thing that I keep hearing from people that have seen it is that it has a very Stranger Things vibe.
It looks in the trailer.
Yeah. And I think people who expected it to be like super shockingly scary are a little bit disappointed with it. But people who dig Stranger Things are finding that like this group of kids feels a lot like that group of kids, and that feels really good for this story, you know. So so exciting stuff on that vein.
I think I'm seeing it tomorrow.
Are you really? Yes. Really wanted to see it sometime soon because I'm going to Connecticut Horror Fest this weekend and I'm going there without having seen it.
And so, I'm very excited about that trailer for is it Mother? Is that the name of that one?
With
That dude. I can't think of his name.
I'm thinking of Jennifer Lawrence. That's why I was thinking.
Oh, I'm thinking of the dude from the old I can't. He was in the James Bond movie. Can't even think of the guy's name. Whatever.
In any case, Jennifer Lawrence is in it. And
yes.
It is supposed to be a very sort of intense movie.
It looks a lot like The Shining.
Yeah.
That sort of thing where – because I remember making a comment watching it going, this is like The Shining and you know, where Jack Nicholson just starts having a breakdown. And my wife said, was that what that movie was about? I'm like, yeah. I mean, not to mention there were some crazy things going on in the house, but this was a dude that was spiraling downward.
Oh, yeah.
Beyond the, hey, I think things are a little rough in my brain right now.
Right. Yeah. The Shining – I mean, we could talk for hours about The Shining. It's amazing and also not the best Stephen King adaptation, but an amazing Stanley Kubrick movie. Okay. On a sadder note, Marvel and DC Comics this week have confirmed the passing of famed comics writer and editor Len Wein on Sunday, September 10th. And as we record this, it is the 14th. So 4 days ago, it was confirmed that Len had passed away. He was 69. He wrote his first story for DC Comics in 1968 and for Marvel in 1970 and continued a prolific career through the 2000s with his most productive period in the 1970s and 80s. He wrote extensively for both Marvel and DC, where he co-created numerous powerhouse properties, including Swamp Thing with Bernie Wrightson, The New X-Men with Dave Cockrum, and Wolverine with John Romita Sr. and Herb Trimpe. He was editor-in-chief at Marvel and at Disney Comics, and an editor at DC, where he worked on Watchmen, among many other titles. His writing also included scripts for animated TV series in the 2000s. He was often seen with his longtime friend and collaborator Marv Wolfman, with whom he started in the 60s. His passing was marked by numerous comic creators and publishers, including both of the Big Two. Here was Marvel's statement. "We are deeply saddened to hear of Len Wein's passing and send our deepest condolences to his friends and family. Len's contributions to the Marvel Universe as writer, editor, and member of the Marvel family will never be forgotten. He will be missed." Dan DiDio said, "Saddened to hear of the passing of my longtime friend and colleague Len Wein. He was a constant source of inspiration, and his spirit and creativity was something every professional should aspire to. He will be missed by many, but his work will continue to entertain for generations." And this was over at, I believe, the Comics Beat. They said, "We have always found Wein to be congenial and creative, a great combination. Our condolences to his family."
Yeah, it was a sad loss. When I think back to when I started reading comic books really insanely, it was DC War Comics, uh-huh. and then kind of augmenting it with the DC Horror Comics
yep.
at the time. And Len's name was in every single one of those horror books. And I remember in the 70s and 80s when he really started to kind of get into the editorial side. And I remember seeing his name in a lot of books that I was reading as an editor. And when you look back at that, when you can see a creator that was given so much, I you don't want to say free reign, but man, that guy created a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
And he was very creative. I think as an editor, he really worked well because he was able to understand that a creator needs to create.
Right.
And I think that to me, that was his biggest thing. I mean, Swamp Thing obviously was huge. The new X-Men, you can go on
sure.
and on about that one as well and where that stands in comic book history. But I think as an editor, he really, really, really helped an awful lot of people. And I completely forgot about the fact that that it was Len and Marv Wolfman. They were together all the time on projects.
Yep.
So it's very sad. Older guy, so it's not so tragically painful. It's just sad.
Not super old, though. 69, right? So that's – but, you know, again, we're in that era now where we're starting to lose all of these longtime creators. But to echo, you know, Dan DiDio's sentiment where he talked about, you know, he'll be missed by many, but his work will continue to entertain for generations. I mean, that, I think, is what every creator, artist, writer, musician hopes for.
Yeah.
You know, that's how you as a creator deal with the existential dread of the fact that you're not going to live forever.
Yep.
Is you hope that something that you created will live on and that people will get enjoyment out of it in the future or find something to make them think about in the future. And so he certainly has a legacy where people will be revisiting his work for generations.
Yeah.
So there you go. That's a little bit of down news right there. But now, one piece of feedback. Our good friend David Anderson had emailed us this week. And we were talking about best betrayals,
yes.
I think, in the last episode. And he said, "I understand why you picked Angel," which, of course, the whole, you know, Angel turning on Buffy thing. He said, "But Game of Thrones show is stocked full. From one end of the season was fully resolved at the end of season 7. He's basically talking about that show is just full of betrayals mm-hmm. from top to bottom. But he also had a comment about the Judge Dredd Oxygen Board story that we read, one that I thought you would find interesting, Matthew. He said, "I'm excited for you to watch Peter Capaldi's Doctor Who episode, Oxygen." He said, "Workers wear spacesuits and have to earn enough mining credit to pay for air."
Wow, I forgot all about that.
So when we talked about, of course, the Oxygen Board story is about these guys who are essentially stealing the oxygen and replacing it with like sleeping gas and putting everybody to sleep. But the end of the story is that they didn't pay their oxygen bill.
And so they
suffocate at the end of the story. So that was interesting. I have not seen that episode of Doctor Who. I don't know.
I forgot all about
that
one.
So that's it for news this week. So we're going to get into comics now. But before we do, Matthew, it's important that we mention as the seasons turn, you got to take care of your facial hair, and you should be doing that with Viking Oils. So go to VikingOilsLLC.com, see the new fall flavors. Order yourself some beard balm, order yourself some beard oil, which is what I use on a daily basis now. And for those that don't know, I think I might have mentioned it last time, I shaved a lot of my beard.
Yes.
And now I'm rocking the goatee,
yep.
which I haven't had that look for a while because I was either full beard, long beard, or horseshoe mustache for quite
yes.
some time.
That was a long time you had that one.
I know, right? And so now I'm back to the goatee for a little while. I suspect it will change again soon. I've debated on growing the beard back out again or going back to the horseshoe mustache. But in any case, every single morning I use Viking Oil to make sure that my skin under my beard does not get too dry, especially when the air starts to get really dry.
And it definitely is. I noticed the last couple days I hadn't used it, and I'm starting to grow everything out. And if you're somebody that's growing something out, and my whole thing is I'll grow it, cut it, grow it, cut it.
Yeah.
I don't know what it is. I just like doing that. When you are using the beard balms like I use, it really doesn't itch or tickle as it comes through. So you don't even notice those things. Like, I notice less of me playing with it and touching my face because it's – I just don't feel it.
Yeah.
And that's a good way to do it.
Too bad, though. You got a beautiful face. You touch it more.
Thank you.
Okay.
Touch it all. You go.
VikingOilsLLC.com. Now we're going to talk about comic books, and you are going to start us off today with the latest installment of The Flash.
Yes. Now we are on issue number 29, and the series in this one is called Negative. Cool thing, crazy thing that I don't know why it's taken me this long to notice. I don't know if you've already noticed this, Brian. When you have a chance to buy two different covers for any of the DC books, I love that they do that. Once you get out of the fact that you're going to confuse yourself sometimes and pick up one by mistake, the main title, the main cover will always have the title of the story arc on the top, where if you're getting the variant, it won't.
I did not notice that. I usually tell Mason, who runs our local comic book shop, to just give me whatever cover he wants. So whatever one he has more of and he wants to get rid of, he can give to me. Because I usually don't go in for variant covers.
Yep.
If I'm picking something up off the shelf, I will just pick the one that appeals to me the most.
Yep,
but I did not notice that one has the name of the arc and one doesn't.
Yep. So this is Negative Part 2. Now, this is a story arc with a guy named Shrapnel. Now, Shrapnel's a dude that, let's just call it what it is, a dude that blows up and shoots metal everywhere.
Okay.
Hence the name Shrapnel.
Well, that's straightforward.
And the story was written by Joshua Williamson. Popman and Christian Deuce are the... Duce are the inkers, are the artist on this one. Hi-Fi does the colors. So very, very interesting. I have not been completely enamored with The Flash since the relaunch of it. This has probably been one of my least favorite ones. And but this, the last couple story arcs have been better, and this one has been really good. And I think a lot of what I enjoy them doing is that we're now starting to focus a lot more on Barry Allen and The Flash as a character, not so much trying to, in my opinion, create that place where somebody watching the show can read. Like, every six pages, there's a Henry Allen reference.
Uh-huh.
Oh, like the TV show.
Uh-huh.
I started to get a little bit tired of that, and it almost seemed like every other page was an advertisement for the TV show somehow. I felt the story suffered in that. So here we start out with Barry Allen. He's in his Flash suit. He's walking into the bathroom. You see his apartment is a mess. There is, you see the gloved hand, and the glove's all ripped up as he's putting on the tub. And you see him putting in a bunch of ice cubes into it. And then you see his feet as he's stepping into the tub in his full uniform. And as he is laying there, you got a great shot. Cell phone on the toilet, like most people do. And then you have him in his suit, completely icing down. Problem is, he has lost a lot of speed. He's lost a lot of connection with the Speed Force. So his metabolism of recovering from injuries is completely slow now.
Huh.
So when he gets home, he is like me getting out of my car every day after work.
Or me just getting out of bed.
Yeah, where I can't even walk because I'm on cement floors for 10 hours. He is getting in the tub and he's just trying to ice the pains away. And he's there. He is reliving the fact in the battle that he had with Shrapnel. And you're seeing the scene where Shrapnel just unloads on him. And then you go back to the tub where he is just sitting there trying to collect himself, and then keeps going back to when Shrapnel exploded, Shrapnel went everywhere, and he was talking with the police. And are you reading Flash, by the way?
I am reading Flash, but as I mentioned last week, I am so far behind in most of my comics that I am now picking a title week by week to catch up on.
So a few months ago, and I don't know when it happened and why it happened, but his skin is now darker now. He's like gray.
Okay.
Like, he's not pure white anymore. At least in this scene, he wasn't, where, you know, so the thing explodes on him, and yeah, it's on the cover. He's that gray as well. So he's talking to these cops, and the cops are like, wow, you know, good thing that you stopped him. And he's like, I should have saved them all. And he goes, you know what? I say that to myself every single day. I should save everybody, but I can't. And loss is part of the job. And they notice the cops going, they're like, hey, why is Flash walking away? And they're both like, yeah, that's kind of weird. So once he has kind of spent himself, he can't even run. He can't do anything. He is in the tub, and it's interesting because let me go back to that one page. So, yeah, so he's in there now, and his color seems to be a little more normal. And as he – the phone is ringing, and he gets out, and he's like, wait a minute. I got to go to work. I got to figure this one out. And then he also has a realization that Shrapnel said something about a boss. So he's thinking, huh, Shrapnel was working for somebody. He goes to Central City Crime Lab, and he is looking over the list of rogues and all the people that could be a possible boss for the Shrapnel guy. And then a voice comes out, and you have one of his assistants come walking out, Kristen, and she's like, where have you been? You know, I've been looking for you all day. And she – because now he can't speed in and out of work anymore. Like, he can't just show up and be like, oh, yeah, I've been here all day.
He has to plan better now.
Yeah, now he's that he can't do this. So she's like, look, something's going on. I don't like this. Maybe you've got a drinking problem. So she's kind of assuming he's got a drinking problem.
Okay.
And she goes, why don't we take a walk downstairs, and I've got to find some evidence. Let's make yourself busy while you sober up. And as he's looking through some files, they go downstairs and they go into the morgue, and the doctor there is chopping somebody up and looking into all their body parts. And, you know, as they're talking, you know, about trying to get a case file, she's trying to get a file from him that most cops can't get at. So she's like, oh, can we get the file? And she's like, don't worry, Barry's good. Barry's one of us. And once that starts to happen, you start thinking, what's going on? Something's wrong. And then a few more pages in, Barry gets invited to go out with a bunch of other cops, and they go to a cop bar. And it's really funny because they're talking out loud, and Barry's like, hey, I don't think that we should be talking about this loud. This is kind of police stuff. And they're like, look around. It's all cops in here. Everybody's talking. Nobody even cares. It's a place where they can unwind. And so they're getting ready to order drinks, and Barry's like, look, I don't drink. And the girl's kind of surprised about that. So as they're sitting there talking, one of the cops who is wearing a scientific coat, so he's like a science guy too, they're talking about Detective Singh and what a hard time he's given everybody. And, you know, they don't like what he's been doing and how he's been acting. And then you kind of start to realize that these four cops, at least one or two of them might be on the take, and something's going on. Because they're saying things and trying to cover things up, like they'll look at Barry like they're talking freely. Then they'll talk to Barry, and then Barry's left with the other two because his partner from the lab goes away. And they hand him some files and say, what do you think of this? And he's looking at it, and he's saying, you know, well, when I see this, you know, there were biological samples that were taken, but there was some blood, and I don't understand that. And she's like, well, there were violent deaths, so what? What's the big deal? And he starts going into some other files, and then as he's explaining this, they are talking about the fact that one of the cases that they're talking about, Detective Singh, told them not to follow up on it. So now you're wondering, wait a minute, are these guys on the take, or is Detective Singh on the take? Because the one of the cops says, we were told not to follow any of this thing, and that was from Singh, so what are you saying? And then Barry says, if somebody's stealing evidence, they're obviously doing this, and they're hurting our lab's reputation. So then Barry goes back to the lab, and as he goes into the lab, he sees three of two detectives and two plainclothes cops or street uniform cops are laying there dead. And then there's a fire in the lab, and he goes in, he gets the girl out. But as he starts to get her out, all of a sudden the whole place catches on fire, and he is overcome by the heat. So somebody is obviously trying to cover up, do some bad things, and now they're trying to burn the lab. So that is where this issue ended. What I really liked about it was it seemed to be, again, that sort of return to Barry Allen, forensic scientist, not Barry Allen, sufferer of my dad spent time in jail. There were no other Flash family here. There were no rogues in here. It was just a very basic Barry Allen Flash story, which really goes back to kind of the 70s and 80s when I started reading Flash. So I really like this one. Popman's art, I liked it, but I'm really looking for something a little different in the style of the way the art is.
See, I like it. Much like Spider-Man, I feel like the Flash is at his best as a character when you're getting this ebb and flow of the action-y Flash-based stories and the more detective-based forensic sort of stories. And I think there's a good balance to be struck there. Like, obviously, it's a comic book. You want action. You want kind of over-the-top stuff. But he has a cool backstory.
He does.
And he's got a cool job, and it's cool to spend time with that. Much like you, you know, you want to see Peter Parker when he was a photographer, the stories he was chasing,
yeah.
when he's with Parker Industries, like, what is he doing? And yeah, then we'll probably talk about Spider-Man in the next episode, but I am going to talk about a character now that is in the Spider-Man universe, and that is Venom. We are, or I am still reading, The Edge of Venomverse, prelude to the Venomverse event that is taking place this fall. And I don't believe that the first episode of that has happened yet, but what's been happening with this Edge of Venomverse thing is it's almost like a Spider-Verse thing, where you had all of these different characters from alternate universes that were getting sucked into this major event that was affecting all of them, you know, across the multiverse. And in this one, you're kind of almost getting the similar thing with Venom. And what they've been doing in these buildup issues is they have been having a different character spotlighted each time. And so the first one that I think we talked about here was it X-23? I think it was X-23 that had been infected by the symbiote, right? So this one is Ghost Rider. And it's the Robbie Reyes Ghost Rider, who is the most recent version, who is the car racer. But we start off here with a guy by the name of Mr. Hyde. His name is Calvin Zabo. He is a villain who has been found guilty of doing mutagenic experiments on everything from animals to kids to adults and all of this other kind of stuff. And you have S.H.I.E.L.D., who is basically saying, there are so many people that hate you and want to see you dead that we have to transport you the old-fashioned way. We have to put you in a prisoner transport, and we have to have an armed guard basically transport you for your day in court, because there's all these mob bosses that want you dead. Everybody knows that you can testify against them because you've done work for everybody. And so they are putting him in a transport and taking him out. And when they do, you see that he is, much like in these scenarios and how they play out, he's very confident that the day's going to turn out okay for him. And so you see this prisoner transport heading out, and there's like three, you know, Humvees that are armored and everything. And all of a sudden they start driving down the street, and you look on top of a building and you have Havoc there from the X-Men, who is, or X-Factor, got a bazooka firing at them. And the S.H.I.E.L.D. vehicle blows the rocket out of the sky because it's got all these guns on the side of it. And he's like, oh, well, you know, that didn't take long for people who know me to start coming after me. And the cool thing is, for the next couple of pages, you don't get to see what's on the outside. You're only hearing them describe it. So you hear somebody come over the radar and say, oh, we've got super gangsters in armored vehicles on our six. Oh, that's the Magia. Yeah, they'll know that my testimony will ruin them. Holy crap, there's vampires outside. Vampires are attacking us now. Oh, yeah, those are the immortals. Yeah. Oh my God, now there's monkeys out here and everything. So all you're hearing is all these things. And then finally you turn the page, and it's just absolute chaos outside as everybody is attacking this, you know, cavalcade of S.H.I.E.L.D. vehicles. And so as all of this is happening out there, you have Mr. Hyde, who doesn't seem to be bothered by it at all. He's like, oh yeah, no, I'm sure, you know, now all of a sudden you have a Deadpool-like character who has Doc Ock arms, looks like a werewolf, and is wearing a Deadpool outfit. And it's a character that he created as Mr. Hyde. And they're like, who the heck is that thing? And he's like, oh, that's Octo Squatchpool. They're like, what are you talking about? Yeah, no, I created him. He's a mercenary now. He probably got hired by all the victims of the families that I terrorized. And so all of this is going on. And then all of the sudden, out of nowhere, all the crazy stuff outside starts getting attacked. And you see that who is attacking them is none other than the Robbie Reyes version of Ghost Rider, who is riding a vehicle that looks like it has tires made out of lightning. And the front grille of the car looks like actual teeth. And riding on top of it is Robbie Reyes, but also Venom. So it is a Ghost Rider Venom. And so the wheels are on fire. And he's, instead of spinning webs, he's spinning chains like Ghost Rider and stuff like that. And so this Venom Ghost Rider starts ripping through everyone. And the S.H.I.E.L.D. agents are kind of like, okay, this is good, right? Because Ghost Rider's kind of a good guy, I guess, sometimes. Maybe he's helping us out there. And sure enough, he's tearing through all the bad guys that were trying to get in and kill Mr. Hyde. But when he finally rips through everyone, including this Octo Squatchpool, and puts him down, and the S.H.I.E.L.D. agent comes out, he kind of smacks the S.H.I.E.L.D. agent aside because she's thinking, oh, hey, thanks for helping me. This is really great. He's not there to help him. He's there to come after Mr. Hyde. And what he ends up doing to Mr. Hyde is using the penance stare to not only make him relive all of his sins, but to suck the sin out of him. Because what this ghostwriter is explaining is that when you combine the Venom symbiote and you combine the spirit of vengeance, you get a creature that feeds off of sin. And that's what it needs to do. And so, and it looks terrifying. And the cool thing is it reminds me of the version of Venom from the 2099 universe, which of course everyone knows that I absolutely love. So it kind of had that vibe to it, but it's a Ghost Rider Venom, and they call themselves the Host Rider. That's what they call themselves. And so he ends up completely draining the sin out of Mr. Hyde until he's like a husk. But before he does, Mr. Hyde is like, I'm not too worried about it. And he's like, oh, Venom says to him, you're thinking that you're still going to be saved, right? And he's like, yeah, you know, I might have a little plan in the offing. And he says, oh, you're talking about the deal that you made with Crossbones. And he's like, yeah. And all of a sudden, the car that he's riding, which has got an actual mouth on it, opens up and the charred body of Crossbones sort of slithers out of it onto the ground. And he's like, yeah, no, I already found out about that and I took care of him. So now you just have to deal with me. And that's when he lays the old penance stare on him and sucks the sin out of him and completely destroys him. And then the car eats him. So I'm kind of digging this Ghost Rider version of Venom because it's right out of a horror story. But then when he does that, he is kind of talking to himself and all of a sudden everything goes kind of wonky and a portal opens up and he gets sucked through it. And when he opens his eyes, he's in another place and he's got that U.S. agent looking Venom version staring at him and saying, ask not what your symbiote can do for you, soldier, but what you can do for your symbiote. And that's how this issue ends. And so now you have the Host Rider has been drafted into whatever war is going to be happening in this Venomverse event. So I treat these Venomverse lead-ins as basically like what-if stories, but they're essentially showing you these twisted versions of Venom that are now going to become part of this overall event that's happening. So I have really enjoyed them so far, and the Ghost Rider one was really cool. So I'm digging it.
So interesting that Star Wars is now on in within two separate comic companies. You've got...
We talked about that, yeah.
We've got Star Wars proper and all the... sort of all the subtitles coming from Marvel, but you now have Star Wars Adventures, which is a younger audience Star Wars comic from IDW.
Which is crazy because Disney owns Marvel and they're letting their Star Wars comics be licensed out to other companies. Now, if you're going to license it out, two of the best companies for licensing are IDW and Dark Horse,
yes.
Right? So the fact that they're going with IDW, you know, who does G.I. Joe and Transformers, they've proven themselves in terms of being able to do licensed books.
Yeah, and very interesting, when I flipped over the back cover, there is an ad for Disney DuckTales, the comic series.
One Joe Caramagna's DuckTales?
It says it right down there. It says Joe Caramagna.
Joe is getting a ton of positive feedback on that DuckTales series. And when people were coming to see him at Terrificon 2017, they were coming to see him for DuckTales.
Yeah. Now, are these even out yet?
I believe the first issue, at least, is out already, and it was very well received.
I'm going to have to take a look and definitely find that one. So congratulations to our good buddy Joe on DuckTales, the comic series from IDW, which is interesting because DuckTales is a Disney property. So Disney's just fanning out some of their younger audience stuff to IDW. Is that how it's happening?
I guess so. I mean, again, I think it's a very interesting time for Marvel right now.
Yeah.
And I find it very interesting that Disney is letting some of these properties be done by other people. What does that kind of tell you? I don't know.
Yeah. So the Star Wars Adventure series is a comic that is for younger readers, but if you're a Star Wars fan like I am, you're going to be able to read this and really get yourself something out of it.
Now, what is the art style like? That's my number one concern about this book.
So very interesting. I will show you, Brian. It is... definitely a younger readers, but it isn't anything...
Oh, I like it.
It isn't anything out of the ordinary.
Here's what would have immediately turned me off if it looked anything like the Star Wars Clone Wars series.
Yes.
I was afraid it was going to have a computer animated sort of look to it. I want the hand-drawn stuff. I want actual comic illustration. That's what I want for this
book. I will show you this. There is a Clone Wars saga style story in here. However, it's not. It's drawn.
Yep. And I'm cool with that. I'm cool with all of that. That's what I want out of that book.
So there's a great cover on here. Rain is the main character in the first story, so she is featured on it. But what I love about this is that when you see it, you are seeing sort of the amalgam of the entire Star Wars saga not just one particular era. So I'm loving the fact that we're going to be able to get a lot of different stuff from the different
Star Wars
times.
So it's like an anthology series.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. So the first story is called Better the Devil You Know. Kevon Scott wrote it. Derek Charm was the artist. Tom L. Long is the letterer. And you have Rain, and Rain is down on her planet, and she – on Jakku. And she is just talking about how they – this is what I do. I wake up. I go out. I go look for junk. Go look for some metal that I can sell. And then when I get it, I bring it to – what's his name? Jukar or Uktar? Oh, boy. I got to – Ukar. Unkar. Unkar. Unkar is the junk dealer that was Simon Pegg's character in episode 7.
Right. Isn't it Ray?
Ray. What did I say? Rain. Ray.
I'm like, Ray. I thought you were talking about a different character.
No,
and then you're like,
no, it's Ray.
Okay.
So Ray's driving around and she's talking about that, you know, I've been a scavenger since I was a kid. I find ships that crashed long ago, lost ships, broken ships, valuable ships. And you see her go in and she is inside something the size of a Star Destroyer. And she talks about the fact that, you know what, I can maybe get a piece of metal out of here, something salvageable, because it isn't the metal that's worth anything. It's the electronics. So that is what Jakar is looking for. Unkar, I should say. Unkar is looking for stuff like that. And if you remember in the movie, she brought him a bunch of junk and he gave her food rations.
Yep.
So that's what he sells. He sells food rations. And she talks about the fact that, you know, it's kind of a crappy situation and a crappy way to live. But, you know, if he likes what you give him, he'll give you survival rations. And she said they're disgusting, but they're the nearest thing I get to a decent meal around here. And if you remember in the movie when she had it and she had, like, bubbling water and she put it in, it kind of turned into, like, a loaf of bread.
Uh-huh.
I remember looking at that thinking, oh, I bet that's delicious.
It just reminded me of college food.
Yeah, apparently it's terrible. So she's in here and she's talking about, you know, the salvaging, and you see her in there going, all right, well, I think I found the jackpot. But then there's something behind her and you see these shadows coming out, and then you turn the page and you find out that it is a couple other scavengers saying the comblings, hand them over. And she goes, I don't think so. And then she takes them both out. She gets out of there. But as she is escaping, one of them shoots the wall and it blows through a power relay and starts to self-destruct the ship. So they get out there, it blows up, and these two guys that went to take care of her are freaking out because they're like, our speeder, the explosion destroyed it. What are we going to do? And she's like, well, you guys got a long way home. And they're like, wait, you can't leave us here. So you see these guys that came to hurt her and rob her are now like, oh, my gosh, please, you need to help us. And she leaves them out there. So as she drives into town to try to cash in that some of the metal that she found, and thinking that it was him that brought those two guys to, like, maybe – you know, undermine her cut in anything. She gets into town and says it was the blowfish. He's been taken. And they're like, who's the blowfish? And that's what they call this guy because he does. He looks like a big puffy pink blowfish. And you've got these aliens that are there and you see them that they went in, they kidnapped him and took him. And as they're explaining the story and she's like, all right, you know what? I need to probably go get him. And they're like, why would you go get him? And she said, because if he's not here, everything falls apart. We need him here. And then she says, what are you waiting for? Clean this junk up. A voice from the outside says, what are you waiting for? Clean this junk up. And you see now that there's another guy that has decided he is going to muscle in and take over for him. So, he's in there and he's like, you know what? You want your stuff. You want your rations. You better start treating me with respect around here. You better start giving me your stuff. I'm the junk boss around here. So she decides that even more, she has to go get him because, despite the fact that Unkar is kind of a jerk, he is a lot more easy to deal with. Then you see on a starship that he has been kidnapped. And you have somebody interrogating him saying, please don't make me ask you again. What'd you do with the JB unit? And he's like, well, I thought you weren't going to ask me again. And it's funny because you can hear that Simon Pegg electronic voice in this story, as he's saying it, and you see the guy, and he's got like a cattle prod, and he's zapping him and electrocuting him, and he's like, okay, well, I need to know what you did with that robot. He's like, look, I sold the robot for parts. I don't even know what I'm doing, what you're even asking about. I sold it, broke it up, and he goes, even the head, and he goes, head? Because the J9 didn't even have a head, and he's like, oh, but you can remember the droid, so tell me, where is it now and who has it? So now you go back to Ray, who is sleeping in a crashed down walker, which I think is so cool. It's on the sands, and then she is looking around. She goes, ah, there you are. You're in pretty bad shape. And she lifts up the sheet, and it is the robot's head that they are looking for.
Huh.
So she's the one with the robot head. And then she starts to think and realize, I have a feeling this might be why they're after him. It doesn't say anything about he gave it to her or that she stole it. But it almost sounded like she might have taken it and said that she was holding out for a high bidder. And then at the towards the end, you see that they have him on the sand, laying down, chained to the ground. And they're saying, all right, last time we're going to ask you what's going on, or we're going to feed you to the birds. And you see these big, nasty birds flying above.
Yeah.
Waiting.
They're not little robins.
Nope. Then you get a great sketch, couple nice pinups in here featuring Ray. But the other story that's in here, Tales from the Wild Space, takes place in the Clone War era. Kevin Scott is the writer. John Samarva is the penciler. Sean Parsons does the inks. Charlie Kirchhoff does the colors. And in this story, it is Obi-Wan is at the restaurant. If you remember, and I know everybody's going, oh, don't mention episode two. If you remember the place he went to in episode two, looking for a map of the planet Kamino because it was missing from the charts. And he went into that like kind of greasy spoon diner.
Uh-huh.
And he had that big alien dude with the forearms, Obi-Wan Kenobi. And he had a dirty t-shirt. So he's in there having his meal, just talking. And a Cy Snoodles looking lady alien comes over and sees that next to Obi-Wan, he's got a little thing sitting there. So she grabs it and runs. And he's like, oh, here we go. So she thinks that she has stolen some amazing Jedi artifact and tries to go to a friend to sell it. And she's like, I think this got mystic powers. You know what? We're rich. And then the guy's kind of like not making a comment back to her. She's like, what's wrong with you? You know, I thought you'd be pleased with me. And then when the face turns around, he takes off the cloak he's hiding under and it's Obi-Wan and he snaps it back from her. And then as she gets ready to leave, you've got the, restaurant guy who's right there, grabs her, holds her up, and that is how that story ends. So it looks like you're going to be getting stuff with a sense of humor. There's a letters page in here, which is
so it's like
great.
Main story, backup story, yep. In each issue. Is that what it is?
Yep, and it's dispatches from Wild Space. So I'm really hoping that they are going to be bouncing around like the cover showed. There are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 10, 15 different covers.
Holy cow.
A lot of them are maybe your local comic shops. Special one, you've got Fred Pye Comics, Jetpack Comics, which is up in New Hampshire, great store. You know, you've got a lot of local comic stores have them. Heroes and Fantasies, Hall of Comics. So Double Midnight, another one up from New Hampshire. So
nice.
I did a book signing up there. So get this book. It's a lot of fun.
It struck me that I forgot to mention the creative team on the Ghost Rider book that I just talked about, the Edge of Venomverse book. It was Cy Spurrier writing, Ty Walker on art, Felipe Sobreto on colors. The letterer was Clayton Coles, and the editor was Devin Lewis on that one. So there you go. Those are our newer books for this week. Now we are going to jump into our Summer of Dread reading finale.
Yes.
Because we are finishing up the Judge Dredd Complete Case Files number one. Hard to believe that we made our way through this entire saga.
It's an amazing book.
It's been awesome. And the cool thing is that we are getting to see the stories of Judge Dredd making his way back mm-hmm. to Earth. Because remember, he is still on the he's still on the moon.
Yep.
Now, the one that we're going to start with today, I believe, is the – what was the name of the story? Is it Return to Mega City? I'm trying to remember which one it was now that I think about it. Oh, no. I'm sorry. It was the jumper one.
Yes.
So we start off with the jumper story. It is written by John Howard. Brian Bolland does the art, and the letterer is Steve Potter on this one. And it begins with a man who is standing atop a skyscraper saying, I can't take anymore. I'm going to throw myself off. And you have Dredd screaming, don't do it, citizen. Littering the streets is an offense. And, of course, the guy jumps, and Dredd catches him.
Mm-hmm.
So he brings him back down and he says, this guy's got 90 days in penal servitude. And the woman says, you can't do that, Dredd. Can't you see this guy is disturbed? And he turns around and says, you know, I could fine you for attempting to obstruct justice. He said, you know what? You're fined 2,000 credits. And she's like, what are you talking about? That's monstrous. 4,000 credits. So this is old school Dredd.
Yeah. This is like parents, you know, give me another day without the phone.
Yep.
Okay, 3 days.
Yep.
4 days.
Now you're grounded for 2 weeks. Now you're grounded for 3 weeks.
And then it gets to the point where there's no way you can ever come back from it.
So he's just on a rampage. Then he handcuffs the offenders, and you have somebody saying, boy, Judge Dredd must have got up on the wrong side of bed this morning. No, he's always like that. Yep. He's the toughest judge on Luna. So we're now at a point where Judge Dredd has been on Luna long enough to have the reputation of being the toughest judge in basically the universe. So he's on the highway. He pulls somebody over for driving too slow and hits him off with a ticket for that. Then you have him just finding people left and right, and you have Judge Tex, who is now going to become the main judge yep. on Luna. But Dredd is kind of going out with a bang. I mean, he nabs a kid that's putting graffiti down. He ends up taking in a bunch of other dudes. He has another guy who, a gang who scatters as soon as they see him that we're doing a holdup or something. He takes those guys down. So he basically takes down everyone, and he goes on a rampage all day long working with other judges. And you see that, you know, he comes home and Walter's like, hey, Judge Dredd's home. You know, you just rest your weary body and Walter will make you a nice bottle of synth broth. But before he can even say anything more to Dredd, Dredd's out cold.
Yeah.
And Walter is saying, you know, you work so hard and people think you're grim and nasty and far too strict, but Walter knows the truth. You have to be the way you are to make the streets safe for decent people. What would the world do without you?
Yeah. He loves
them. So that whole story is kind of just showing like that Dredd never turns it off.
Yep.
From the time that he steps on to shift to the time he goes home, he is nonstop, he is relentless, and he does his job.
And he is probably getting a little burned out of being on the moon.
Well, right.
Because it's not a natural place for him to be.
And his time is basically up now because he is now walking in to the office where you have Judge Tex, and he's saying to him, you know, you're going to be great here in Texas, saying, you know, you all brought a little law and order to our little old colony, Judge Dredd. I just hope I can do half as good. And Dredd saying, you'll be fine. If you remember, when Dredd first got there, he saw Judge Tex as someone who was a complete, you know, half-ass.
Yeah.
Like not doing his job, not holding people accountable. The crime was off the charts. And they come back and Dredd has sort of set the record straight here and now hands it back over to Tex, and he's telling him, you'll be all right with this. You'll be good at this. And so the next thing you know, Dredd is getting ready to take the Earth shuttle back down later. And so he gets down there, and as soon as he gets off of his shuttle, you have his landlady, his landlady Maria,
yep.
who comes and gives him a hug. You have Walter, who's super excited to be back, and Dredd's like, you know, Walter's saying, that's enough. You know, you're going to wrinkle his uniform. And Dredd's like, yeah, that's all right. Come on, we'll walk home together. I want to get the feel of the streets once again. And he's walking home, and the feel of the streets is awful.
Yeah.
He's like, yep, it's just as I remembered it. This is the worst area, over 4,000 crimes committed every day on this one street. You have people who are doing all this stuff wrong, and they see him, and they're like terrified. But he's like, hey, good morning, citizens. I would remind you that armed robbery is illegal in Mega City 1. But then he keeps walking. And the guys that were committing an armed robbery are like, what the heck is going on? Has Judge Dredd gone soft? You know, you have another guy who gets thrown out of a window and he's like, Judge Dredd, the Southside Boys is breaking up my restaurant. I didn't pay protection. Could you do something? Sorry, citizen. None of my business.
Report it to the
Justice Department.
Yeah, just report it.
So he goes in and everybody's like, what is going on with Judge Dredd? Like, what's happening? And of course, then one of the judges pulls up next to him on his bike and says, you know, we've been looking for you all over the place. The chief judge sent me to round up with your reinstatement papers. And he swears him back in. And the second he swears him back in, he's like, good, now get off your butt, rookie. I need your bike. And he takes the rookie's bike and he goes back. And every person that he passed along the way letting him get off light, he goes back and he's saying, Judge Dredd's back in town. And he just rounds up person after person after person. And he's saying, you know, I got a city to clean up. So it's kind of awesome because as soon as he gets back, everybody's like, wow, he's really changed a lot. No, he just hadn't been sworn back in yet.
And he wasn't going to do anything that was against the law.
Because it's illegal to impersonate a judge when you are not sworn in as a judge. And so he waited until he got sworn back in. And then he went right back on the same rampage that he had been on when he was up on Luna and basically rounds up every criminal in town. And so that's how that one ends. So Judge Dredd is now back on Earth. He's back in Mega City 1. And The next story opens up with people fleeing a burning building. And anybody who lives in one of these super tall skyscrapers or any of these, you know, apartment complexes, they are equipped with glide chutes.
Yeah.
Which means if they ever have to evacuate quickly and they have to go out a window or they have to go out a fire escape or whatever, they can use their glide chutes to glide back down to the ground safely. However, you can tell that when people have to start evacuating this building, they are not used to doing that. And so a lot of them aren't that skilled with their glide chutes, nope. And they start smashing into one another.
They're landing on each other.
People are falling to the ground, yep. Landing on one another. And you have Dredd saying, I know that it's this maniac firebug that's on the loose in the city, but who could it be? This person that has been causing all of these fires. What are we going to do about it? I have to figure out who it is. And now we're getting back to these cases where Dredd is doing some detective work. You know, because there are just cases where it's just straight up like the last two that we just read, where he is seeing the criminal, rounding up the criminal. Here, there is a mystery to solve here. Yep. He's trying to figure out who is this firebug person. And he's snapping at Walter because Walter's trying to talk to him while he's trying to think about what this can be. You know, he's like, get public records. He calls the office and see who has the deeds to all of these places that have been hit by firebug. And sure enough, you have the chief judge was waiting for him and saying he struck pay dirt, Dredd. The buildings all belong to Mr. Chuck McCracken. He's been in financial trouble lately. Perfect motive for him to be doing this firebug stuff. And then you have Dredd who goes and confronts him and says, let me just say that I believe that you set fire to your own buildings in order to collect insurance money. That machine in there is going to remove the top layer of your skin from your entire body, and then we're going to test it for traces of fire-raising chemicals. So the way that he gathers evidence to prove that this guy is guilty is he takes him into a room which looks like the most torturous device that you could ever possibly see in your entire life. And the guy's like, that's ridiculous. You can't do this to me. And he's like, I can and I will. Under the authority granted to me by the Reasonable Grounds for Suspicion Act, that I can do whatever I want. So he says, take him away. Sure enough, they strip this guy's skin off of him. And the scientists come back later and they're like, we got him cold. Analysis of the skin shows traces of petrol-based fire razor. Charles McCracken, I find you guilty of 10 counts of arson and 718 counts of homicide. Have you anything to say? And the guy's like, sheesh. That's all he's got. And he's like, take him away. Good work, Dredd.
His mummy wraps.
Take the rest of the day off. You earned it. And so Dredd gets home. Now, earlier, he had snapped at Walter because Walter had come to Dredd and said, I have my ownership papers. I bought them back. I bought back my freedom. And I'm giving them to you because I want you to be my owner forever. And Dredd was like, get out of here.
Yeah.
You know, and he leaves. So Walter leaves him a note. So he comes home after this hard day of work, after stripping this dude's skin off and getting him arrested and all this kind of stuff. And the note from Walter says, if Walter cannot be your Wobot, there's no reason for him to go on living. Walter has decided to find a tall building and throw himself off. So now he has to go out looking for Walter, and Walter has Judge Dredd's bike that he rode out to the top of this building where he's basically going to throw himself off. And so Judge Dredd has to go out and basically talk him off the ledge. And as he does that, Walter's so happy he knocks the bike over.
That's the best part of the whole thing. Cripes the bike.
The bike falls off the ledge. So luckily Dredd had called a couple of his buddies and they came by with a safety net that caught Walter in the bike. And then, you know, Judge Dredd says, you know, Walter saying, oh, I'm so sorry, you know, for all the trouble I caused you. And he says, you should be. No robot in mine is going to behave in that ridiculous manner again. And, you know, Walter says, do you mean that I can be your robot? Yes. And, oh, I'm the happiest robot in the world. And that is the final case file that we have in this compendium. But then you get some bonus material. You end up getting the first Judge Dredd story. And it's just at the top of it, it's just saying the first Dredd, the first Dredd, the first Dredd. And the subtitle under Dredd is Mega City Law Controlled Judge Dredd, Bank Raid in New Manhattan, Street Level 95, Lawbreakers About to Escape. Now, one of the cool things about them including this story, which was scripted by Pat Mills and John Wagner with the art by Carlos Esquerra, is it says the first story printed here mainly shows the original art. It was mainly to show the original art. It also contains evidence of Dredd acting in his role of judge, jury, and executioner, the side of the character that was cut out. And so when you hear about Judge Dredd, the you know, judge, jury, and executioner, in most of the case stories, you're not seeing the executioner piece.
Yep.
He's having people arrested. He's solving crimes. He's having them thrown in jail. But in this first Judge Dredd story, he basically murders everyone.
Yep.
Every person that he runs into that's committing a crime, whether it be jaywalking or anything else, he is just judging everybody left and right. A bunch of bank robbers, he uses a ricochet bullet to lure them out of the vault that they've holed themselves up in and then kills them all when they get outside.
Which is great with this part because you're kind of being introduced to Judge Dredd for the first time and how crazy he is about stuff. You're also getting a breakdown of the gun.
Yep, you get the breakdown of the gun in the six different modes.
Yeah, they'll talk about, oh, use these bullets. And in the movie that we're going to see, we're going to watch together, in the next couple of weeks, there is even a thing in there where he just says, repeater, grenade bullet.
Right.
Now you're actually seeing it.
Right. You are seeing the executioner piece of it. And so the whole story is basically him finding different ways to murder people who are breaking the law. And then he rides away on his bike and says, I'll carry on with my cleanup patrol. Only those who break the law have anything to fear from me.
Mm-hmm.
I am the law and you better believe it. So you could see like the genesis of the Anthrax song in here as well, right? And that's the way that ends. And then you end up getting a couple of backup stories of Walter the Wobot, which are just ridiculous one-page stories of him getting dressed to go out on the town in one. In another, he goes to the pool hall to relax, but he doesn't realize it is a billiards hall. So he runs in with his bathing suit to do a cannonball and breaks through a bunch of pool tables and gets kicked out of there. You have another one where his brother, who is Gus, shows up and is going around town robbing people, and Walter is getting framed for it. So Walter goes on the run because he believes that people are going to want to arrest him. And it turns out it was his brother that was out committing crimes in his name. And they end up in a factory where their mother is the robot in charge. And the mother ends up recycling his brother Gus and turning him into a transistor radio that Walter then gives to Judge Dredd as a present because his brother wasn't fit to be a robot because he was bad. And so all of these stupid stories with Walter are just completely ridiculous and total comic relief to sort of palate cleanse in between like Judge Dredd stories. You have another one where he goes on a game show and he ends up winning the game show because all of the questions are about Judge Dredd. And it turns out that the host of the game show is also a robot and he kind of tilted the questions in a way that would make Walter the winner of that. So those are all pretty funny stories. Then in the back you get some of the covers. They're all black and white, of course, but some very cool covers of many of the stories that we read, and that sort of rounds out the Judge Dredd Complete Case Files Volume 1. So, man.
A lot of fun.
If you didn't know a lot about Judge Dredd's history and a lot about the case files, and I hadn't read a lot of these stories, this was a fantastic way to really get your fill of Dredd as we get ready for the new TV show to come out and stuff like that. Like, this is such a great primer. And they have a ton of these compendiums of Judge Dredd case files. This is just volume one. They have like 10 of them.
Yeah, I want to say there's 12 total.
Yeah.
And they just go through all the years and they all have that same look, which is what I like. Like, if you put them on a bookcase, all the spines all line up perfectly.
Right.
You've got every cover is just a straight shot of Judge Dredd.
And again, dude, the retail price on this is $20.
Yep.
And you could probably get it for cheaper on Amazon. Like, I cannot recommend this compendium highly enough.
Yeah.
I mean, it gives you everything that you need to know about the core of Judge Dredd. Now, what it doesn't have is it doesn't have some of the most popular sagas that he was known for, the most popular storylines, the Judge Death storyline and stuff like that. That stuff all comes later, but start with number one and build your collection, man. Like, this is one that I could see myself buying future collections of and putting on my bookshelf because it's great. So this was an absolute blast. Now, that means that we have one more installment of the Summer Reading and Watching Project, and that is to watch the Judge Dredd movie. So not for next episode, not for 794, but for 795, we are going to be talking about the Dredd movie from a few years ago. So the Carl Urban Dredd movie, if you have not watched it, boy, are you in for a treat.
Yeah.
If you have watched it, then it's going to be fun to revisit it. So that will be your homework in the next couple of weeks, was to watch that movie, and we'll talk about it in episode number 795. But that is going to wrap up episode 793 of the Secret Identity Podcast. So for Mr. Matthew Herring, this is Brian Letendry signing off. Have a great rest of your week, and we will talk to you in a few short days.
Bye-bye.
The rest of the comic publishing world may finally be arriving to the party, but Drive-Thru Comics is the one that started it all. The first downloadable comic shop is still leading the way when it comes to digital comics. Featuring hundreds of publishers, excellent prices, and top-notch customer service, Drive-Thru is a great experience all around. Another thing that sets Drive-Thru apart from a lot of other digital comics platforms is this. When you buy a comic, you own it. You get a watermarked PDF file that you can read on your laptop, your tablet, phone, or any other device. You choose how you enjoy the comics you buy. So head over to drivethroughcomics.com today, and on your way to checking out, download a free issue of Secret Identity.